Hello, everyone, and welcome to Season 5 of Goddamn GameCube. If you like our show, please leave us a rating on Spotify and subscribe on YouTube. Thank you, and enjoy today's episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Goddamn GameCube. Greg and Riley are your hosts today. Welcome to another episode of Spooky Month. Today, we're talking about Condemned Criminal Origins and Condemned 2 Bloodshot. Riley, take it away. Let's do it.
Alrighty, so we're going to start with the first one, Condemned Criminal Origins, which is a first-person survival slash psychological horror game developed by Monolith Productions, and this was also published by Sega. It was a launch title for the Xbox 360 on that fateful day, November 22nd, 2005. You assume the role of FBI agent Ethan Thomas, who is pursuing a killer known as the Matchmaker in a city experiencing an unprecedented wave of violent crime. So, Greg, what made you want to revisit this game for the podcast, and what was your experience with it when it came out?
I played this game. This is another high school game for me. So I played this in 2006, 2007. Yep. Number one, I'm surprised there was a horror game that was a launch title.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen that other than this only time. So. Like, what made me want to revisit it, I remember really enjoying actually both of them. And also, it has some mechanics that I've also never seen again,
right?
Which we're going to get into. You know, some of the gunplay is very unique.
Yep.
I also remember this game being very scary and intimidating, at least as a kid.
I myself, I actually, with a friend, rented it from Blockbuster once upon a time. And we played it. I played, I think, the first two or three levels at his house. And I think we got too scared and we hung it up.
So what I have in my notes here, we're going to get into all these details. What I have in here is it's not pretty.
No.
It's a bit clunky. And it's not the most culturally sensitive game I've ever played. But it comes like together to form something unique that I have not seen since.
Yeah.
That might be the most like diplomatic way for me to put this.
I think that's a good way to set the stage here.
Yeah.
So perhaps the most notable aspect of the gameplay here is when your character Ethan conducts a forensic analysis of a crime scene. Can we talk a little bit about this system and how well implemented you feel it was?
Sure. So in the first game, because we're going to be talking about the second one a little bit later. Mm-hmm. In the first game, I would consider it to be really on rails.
Yeah.
Like it's really linear.
Yeah.
You know, they pretty much, how do I put this? You have a couple of different forensic tools, but the game is really going to tell you which one you have to use.
Yeah.
There really isn't any choice at any time.
Yeah.
And you have to do it right for you to be able to proceed. So it's linear, right? So I don't really, it's fine. It's just kind of, it puts like a unique wrinkle into the first person combat, which is the only other gameplay.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a cool idea to sort of signpost your way through a level. Like,
yeah.
Oh, you have to follow this trail of blood or whatever using your UV lamp. And I think it's like this in particular sets the gameplay apart from other first person games that were coming out at the time. I think so. The other half of the experience is the combat. Fairly simple, but there are a few mechanics that make it slightly thoughtful. So for one, each melee weapon you can pick up has certain stats, which will be helpfully compared on screen to the one you're currently holding. And you can only hold one at a time. Some weapons also serve a dual purpose, and you need to search for them to progress through a level, like a crowbar getting you into safes or an axe being able to chop down certain doors. Good timing for blocking is also required in combat, and there is an option to perform like finishing moves on enemies, which to the best of my knowledge serves no other purpose than like a little extra flourish, but
yeah, it doesn't do anything.
Just something else to do. Notably though, there are a limited amount of firearms in the game and none of them can be reloaded. And when you're out until you find another gun. So just to talk a little bit about that as well as in general, the gameplay, would you agree that the simplicity of the gameplay is a strength? And is there anything in particular where you feel there was room for improvement?
Yeah, so I think to answer your question, the simplicity of the gameplay is a strength. At the beginning, you're not really sure, like, is it going to be kind of too clunky, too, like, ham-fisted? But I think one of the most compelling aspects to the game is the gun system.
Yeah.
Where you can't reload, you can't find ammo, And what I really like is to know how much ammo you have. You have to open the gun and count it.
Yeah.
Right? Like Ethan will open it and it will show you how much you have.
Yeah.
I actually have a very like iconic like memory as a kid. This is a funny anecdote where I was in Condemned. I was in one of the levels and I was in a bathroom stall and I found like a sawn off shotgun.
Yeah.
Right. And then there was this enemy behind me that was screaming and yelling at me. I opened the gun to see how much ammo I had. I had zero. Like it's just an empty gun.
Right.
But my dad was walking by at the same time and he went, "Oh, you're screwed."
I love those little flybys that parents sometimes
Oh my God. But, that's a very like iconic moment of my childhood. Like my dad happened to be walking in on me playing Condemned.
Yeah. it's quite the game to walk past. But
yeah.
I think the only other one I know of at the time was the King Kong video game. Did you play that?
It
was
no, like an Xbox the Peter Jackson? Title.
Yeah. It was surprisingly really good, but there was a you didn't have any heads up display or anything. You had to literally just have, you had a button to check your ammo. He says, "I have 9 bullets on backup," or whatever.
Oh, that's cool.
So it was maybe around the same time as this, but I don't know. I kind of miss that as a mechanic.
Well, I also like, I'll say this too. There is a taser option as well that you get pretty early in.
That's right.
Like, and what I like about this game is like, not only is the combat simple, as soon as you learn the first mechanics and the first mission, there's nothing else to learn.
Right.
You know, like you pick up a melee weapon, you pick up a gun, and then they give you the taser. And there's nothing else to learn. You can kind of just master it throughout the entire game.
All the forensic stuff is in the first mission.
Yeah.
It's all right there.
Yep.
This kind of fit into the same category as their other game, Fear, where you have a very, very simple system all the way through. I was like, this game, like when I was talking about Fear, I was like, this game rules. It's just dudes shooting other dudes.
Yeah, the whole time.
And then this game is just dudes fighting with pipes. Like, the whole time.
And I'll say this too. Like, it's interesting to me how Fear and Condemned are made by the same people.
Yeah.
And they both came out at like the same time. So
there's a couple like very similar, like they feel kind of similar. Like they're similar, like sound effects.
To me, they don't. Like they feel very different. Like, what I try to think of is, think if you're like a game dev and you have two projects, they're both horror and they're both very different. Like,
yeah. I mean, it's not to say that the presentation is the same or anything like that, but like there's similar, you can, to me, you can kind of tell it's at least the same era of games.
Yeah,
you
know? Sure. Mm-hmm.
So I would say in particular that the sound production is really strong in this game. They help the combat feel a lot more impactful than it otherwise would. You have some kind of like, I was curious how this game was going to age. Like, there is maybe a little bit of jankiness to the gameplay that the sound kind of papers over, and you get a lot of really satisfying thuds and clanks when you hit stuff with whatever you're holding. So I like the sound a lot. What do you think of the main character's voice performances?
So I actually think, for better or worse, the voice acting in this game is fine.
Like,
I think it's pretty good for the most part.
Yeah.
I think there are a handful of side characters, other policemen who I think are not very good. They're like kind of caricatures.
Yeah.
Of
other voices or whatever.
Yeah. But I like the lead actor. I think he's good.
No, he's because I don't know. What's his, Greg Grunberg?
Yeah.
He's okay in other stuff, but he is perfect as sort of the like kind of dorky, a little bit out of his depth detective in this game. I think he's great.
Do you know what like kind of jumped out at me as I was replaying this game like about a month ago? Do you remember like in early Xbox 360, like every male like character model is like, I call them like the Gears of War bulky dude.
Yes.
Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
Where like 2005, 2006, everyone is like this like square shouldered, like giant muscle dude.
Why do you think that was?
I don't know. It's really strange.
I was thinking about it as well, because I think there's a lot more of that in the second game. And I feel like it's whatever like dev tools they were using.
Maybe.
Or it was just easy to design characters that way. There's not a lot of variation in the body types,
I guess.
But no, so I like him as sort of this bumbling character, I guess. The voice acting in general, I really didn't have too many complaints with in the first one. I think in general, the sort of symphony of the sound design, the ambient sound design of voice, especially the scary voices, like the guys on the street, they're really terrifying.
Yep.
I think their voices, a lot of the foley and music kind of building up that eerie atmosphere as you crawl around these like abandoned buildings and empty streets and stuff.
Well, I'll say this, the scariest parts of really the game are a lot of the game is dark. You're getting around via flashlight.
Yep.
And hearing the sounds of enemies breathing and running through hallways ahead of you that you can't see.
Around corners, you can't see anything.
Yeah, and also what's interesting too is like you have to go toe-to-toe and man-to-man with people. Like, you know, it's not like you're bustling with guns and ammo and you're just ripping through people.
Right,
nope,
right.
You've got a pipe, they've got a pipe. You got to get ready to go.
You really feel that knot forming in your stomach around some of those corners.
Yep.
I think on the subject of those buildings, I feel like kind of the samey environments are maybe a point of struggle for Monolith in this era. Similar to Fear, they're maybe a bit more varied, but a lot of them are kind of drab to behold in this one.
I think... when I was telling you about this game, like, you know, I was very familiar with it as a kid. I replayed it recently. I think what I told you was, hey, going into this, keep in mind the first two or three levels all look the same. They're ugly. It's kind of boring. Like, just give it a chance.
Yeah.
And I think actually as this game goes, it gets more interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where I think what we complain about on the show a lot is games kind of fall off after a while. By that, I mean, you get midway through a game, it starts to kind of go downhill.
Right.
I think this game gets better as it goes and looks better as it goes.
I agree. There's a little bit more variety as it goes on. I do consider in general, I think the vibe of the city is very effective. You know, I think they took some cues from popular movies of the last couple of years, like Seven, The Silence of the Lambs, Saw, that kind of thing. Just creepy city stuff. Well, you know, you mentioned it's not the nicest to look at anymore. The visual fidelity has aged a bit. Some younger audiences may find it a little unpleasant. I think the tech at work in this game is actually fairly impressive for a 360 launch title.
Yep.
In particular, I found some stuff about how... So the team, they emphasized natural light versus, you know, static. Like, you know, they used the like shadow movement and stuff to kind of... You know, we've talked about the enemies around corners. You see a little glimpse of a shadow. It's like, oh, shit, what was that? You know, very effective in building that kind of horror atmosphere rather than, you know, because it wasn't super ubiquitous at the time to have that per pixel or volumetric lighting.
No. And like I said before, I consider this game to be very unique. Like, how much time has gone by since this came out? 18 years?
Yeah.
And I haven't really seen anything since that kind of comes together either visually or gameplay like this one. Not really.
I haven't seen something where it's just a grimy shithole that you have to fight your way through and it's really gnarly.
And that's like it.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It's very, very pure in that way. And also unique at the time, I feel like there are a good amount of hallucinatory screen effects, which were not super common at the time. There's... for example, there's a really cool moment where your character hallucinates this big flock of ravens coming through the window. I'm not sure if you remember
that. Yes, yeah.
Flock of ravens, I found, I had to look it up, is called an unkindness.
Wow.
An unkindness of ravens.
Wow.
So we learn a little bit here today on this episode.
A little bit of a learning lesson.
I thought that was really cool looking. I wanted to ask you really quick if you have any standout favorite scary moments from this game.
Absolutely. There are two.
Okay.
I know we'll probably dive into story in a little bit.
Yeah.
My two favorite scary moments are when you're in a department store level and one of the mannequins walks off a display and walks off into the distance.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my fucking God.
Pre-Bioshock.
We should make note of that. Yeah, Bioshock did the mannequin, scary mannequin thing.
Mm-hmm.
In Condemned, 2 years previous, you go to a department store, there's a department store model wearing clothes, and one of them walks. And I'm like, oh my God, they're real people.
So awesome.
And there's another really good one. I don't know if this got you, but it got me as a kid. You have to do a... you know, like, you know, the criminal investigation portions.
Yeah.
There's one way later in the game where there's a guy in a locker and you have to investigate his body. But
this
then
is the
he,
best one
but
for
then
my
he
money.
Grabs you and he's still alive.
You're because basically what happens is there's a couple of these puzzles where you have to snap a photo for your buddy in the department.
In the bureau. Yeah.
And she's like, I didn't really, that one kind of came out fuzzy or something like that. Can you get another one? like of the guy's face, and you zoom in and his face turns to you and you realize he's still alive. That scared the shit out
of me. I mean, to be honest, that is a very clever scare.
Yeah.
And I think what they did a good job with is none of the other criminal investigations go haywire. They're all standard.
Yeah.
You can't get attacked. Nothing happens. But then when you're taking a photo of this guy, he grabs you and talks to you.
I like how it kind of, it's taking the mechanic and turning it on you. Like, it's breaking the rules a little. It's kind of similar to like The Last of Us when you get attacked at that workbench.
Yep.
I love shit like that.
But in 2005.
Yes, so. Exactly.
Yep.
So it's really like, I don't consider this to be like the scariest game I've ever played or anything, but I do feel like there is that pervasive atmosphere of just like, ugh, like dread.
Do you know what I would call this game? At times it's very scary, but a word I use, this game is intimidating.
Yeah.
If you ask me, where, like I said, you're never decked out in guns. You're right. Not this overpowered dude. There are people with pipes and crowbars, and you have that too.
Yeah.
And you have to be ready to fight people off.
I think also it calls to mind a little bit, I don't know if everyone has this experience, but like, it called to mind if you're ever like, you say walking home from a concert or something, or you're in the city at night and you just hear someone shouting like really, and it's indistinct and you can't, and I'm like, I don't know if I'm in danger, but I don't feel good about this.
Yes,
you know, that kind of thing. So that's how I would describe the atmosphere of this game. But you ready to get into the story a little
bit? Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
So the story begins as the city of Metro, very very generic. I think that's actually what they say the name of the city in Saw is as well. It's just Metro.
Yep.
It's Metro Last Light. So
it's New York City without the trademark claims, right?
Like all game cities, you know. I was picturing maybe somewhere in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Beset by a crime wave of random assaults and serial killings in the areas where this is most prominent. They make note of birds are evidently being drawn in by a strange sonic anomaly and dying from a brain hemorrhage. So you'll just find birds dying on the ground throughout. Yep,
falling out of the sky.
Yeah. So that's kind of eerie. So Ethan, this detective, and a few of his fellow officers inspect the latest victim of the matchmaker serial killer in this abandoned building. Before long, he becomes separated from them and loses his gun to a mysterious man. The man shoots both of the other officers and shoves Ethan out a window. So I want to ask you an important question before we get into the rest of this series. Is Ethan a bit of adult?
We were talking earlier about how many bad Ethans there are in video games.
Yeah.
I actually think I don't dislike this character.
I don't either, but I do. I mean, this is quite the blunder right out of the gate. And more evidence against him will follow. But it was just very funny. Like, oh, he's on the radio. He's like, oh, I lost my gun.
Yeah. You think he could be a little bit more forthcoming? We're just like, no, this person took my gun. No, he did this. Because Ethan gets into a lot of trouble very soon.
Mika, I think that's also interesting about this game is that a lot of its peers present you as this very formidable, kind of competent. If some other developer made this game, he wouldn't have made such a mistake, maybe. But you're kind of on your back foot, right?
Yep.
At the start. So Ethan awakes in his apartment, greeted by a strange old man named Malcolm Van Horn, who informs him that he has been framed for the murder of the other two officers. So he's on the lam, and he is aided by a sympathetic colleague named Lieutenant Rosa. He uncovers a long-range camera setup across the street from his house, which has been taking photos of his case notes, which are serial killer cases that have gone cold. Each of them is marked with an X, and one of them points Ethan towards what turns out to be the corpse of the matchmaker that he's been pursuing in an abandoned department store. We mentioned this earlier. And Ethan and Rosa come to the conclusion that a new serial killer they call Serial Killer X is responsible for Ethan's cases going cold. So I think at this point, Ethan begins to hear voices calling out to him, and he starts getting those hallucinations. This character keeps appearing who has strange like metal implants. Like,
yep.
He's this really tall guy. He has weird stuff going on with his face. And apparently in the game's files, he is called The Hate.
Yep.
And it's not really made clear until the end what sort of role this character is going to play. But you also uncover, Rosa calls you and she says that she's uncovered oddities in Ethan's personnel file. including higher than average bone density and a chest x-ray, which has been censored to obscure his vocal cords. So I just want to take a moment to think about, because I thought that all of this was going to sort of come to a conclusion in this game. And I'm thinking about how funny it is in hindsight where it goes in the next one.
Yeah. I think if we were to sort of put together like this first half that you've outlined here,
yeah.
I actually think the plot of the game, at least in the first half, is pretty unique.
Yeah, like I think it's good.
I can't think of a plot in real life or fictional where there's a serial killer killing serial killers.
Besides Dexter.
Right.
But that's different.
Right. So when did Dexter come out? At least season one.
2006, but it was based on a book from earlier.
Got it. Okay. So I actually think the plot to this is pretty unique.
Yeah.
And so I think as a kid, I didn't understand the deception of like Ethan's personnel file. There's certain redacted parts of his medical history. I didn't really get that as a kid. It made more sense to me now. So essentially what the game is trying to tell you is there's someone killing serial killers. And this sort of sonic emission that's killing birds, you are either immune to it or you're going to be affected by it. You're not really sure yet, but you're involved in it in some way.
Yeah.
That's kind of where we are.
Yeah, exactly. And it's pretty early on, but I thought it was cool. I got a little bit of a shiver when you find out that he's been watched like across the street with a long range lens and stuff. It does give it a little bit of it makes you feel even more vulnerable than you already do. So kind of at that point, Ethan and Van Horn link up again, and you're going after serial killer X in an abandoned orchard in the country. And Van Horn kind of like bushwhacks you here and unsuccessfully attempts to convince serial killer X, who is revealed to be his nephew Leland, to give himself up. He's like, you know, this has gone too far or whatever. And he does not convince him to do this, so he winds up overpowering him, and he tells Ethan to find and kill the man with the metal implants.
Yep.
So the man, he appears to be like a ninja of some kind.
I always called him as a kid, like the ninja with sticks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very surreal, not necessarily in a bad way, but there you have like this boss fight with him. And Ethan kills him by ripping like the implants out of his body. So you wind up driving away from the orchard with Van Horn, and he reveals to you that he has Leland, his nephew, in the trunk of the car, and it is up to you whether to shoot him or not. If you don't, Leland appears to kill himself, and otherwise you just shoot him, and presumably he dies. Later, Rosa discloses to Ethan that the department believes Leland was associated with a cult of some kind. And there is a stupid jump scare to wrap us all up where Ethan looks in the bathroom mirror and he hallucinates that he has the implants of, it reminds me of like the way Dead Space ends. That kind of thing. So I want to ask you, like, what do you think of the direction that the story takes in the back half, how it wraps up, and based on how it wraps up, what were you maybe expecting from a Condemned sequel?
Well, I'll say this. Like, I do think the final couple of levels are interesting.
They're fun.
Like, I do like, you remember like the farmhouse? Essentially, when you're trying to get to Leland, you're trying to find him at the orchard.
Yeah.
You're in a farmhouse and there's like a bunch of sentences that you have to read with a UV light and you have to follow where the sentence goes.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I think the way this turns out, I would say they get right on the edge of like when I think I've said on the show, when things get too sci-fi-y for me, I tend to not like it. I think you get right up to the line.
Yep.
Right. Where this game is, I think a word I've used on the show too, is this game is grounded in a lot of realism, right?
Yeah.
It's not too crazy or wild, but when you get into the attic of the house and the ninja man with sticks, you fight him.
Yeah.
And then when you get out of the farmhouse and you have to go to the final boss, which is the ninja stick guy again.
Right.
It's a little odd.
Yeah.
And how do I put this? You can kind of put it together where Ethan's medical file's redacted. There's a cult involved. Maybe Ethan isn't in the cult, but they're interested in him because of his medical history. There's something happening, but it's kept very open-ended. Like nothing's really explained to you at all.
That's what I remember. I said that to you at the end. I was
like, but do they explain it?
And you said, yes, they do.
And I said, unfortunately, in the second one, they do.
Because it's I don't think that the story in this game is bad. I think it starts out really strong, and then it goes into some weird territory that is very kind of, yeah, like you say, open-ended or just... And I was maybe hoping that it would come to a more solid conclusion, especially because this game is... I think this game, as we will discuss, is a lot more put together than the second one.
Sure.
You know?
I mean, I'll say this too. Like, there is, at the end of the game, there's a very important cinematic where Rosa meets Ethan in a restaurant.
Yeah.
Where Ethan is cleared of the murders of the police officers.
Yeah.
So that was another, like, a sort of a third plot line running through the game where he's, the Bureau is, thinks he killed, Ethan killed his partners, essentially.
Right. In the beginning.
But Rosa also says to Ethan, like, she holds up a note that says, I'm wearing a wire.
Right.
So the city and the Bureau thinks there's a cult involved or that's making people sick.
Right.
And so Rosa kind of tips Ethan off, and it's very open-ended.
Yeah, like, they maybe suspect that you're involved or something like that.
Yeah.
And she's trying to help you out with it. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's a very, like, see you next time kind of ending.
Well, I'll say this. You asked me, like, what do I think of the story? Even if you didn't, I'll tell you anyway.
Yeah.
I actually like it.
Yeah.
And we're about to talk about the second one, which is unfortunate. But I would say if the game was left open-ended, I like it a little bit more.
Sure.
I think I said this about Fear as well. I have a similar opinion about this game. I think they fell ass backwards into a good story to some extent.
Yeah.
Where I feel like their serial killer plot is cool. The framing is cool. The cult thing teeters for me, but it's left open-ended, so it's fine.
If this was the only one they made, I would probably be perfectly fine with it.
Yeah, perfectly fine with it.
Like, all right, well, that ended kind of weird, but it was still a unique experience. So maybe to wrap it up for the first one, would you still recommend this game to who and why?
Okay, so should we, and I was debating discussing this on mic or not, should we maybe talk about how this game isn't exactly like, what's the word for this? It's not the most tasteful game.
It was made in 2005. Yeah, we can talk about it. It really depends on if you are someone, it depends on your sensibilities and what you enjoy doing in a game, what you don't enjoy doing, what you enjoy the gamification of, perhaps. A lot of the fighting that you're doing in this game is against just sort of like vagrants and people like living in these abandoned buildings.
Yeah, or like you could say that a lot of the combat is you fighting unhoused folks with pipes. Right?
Yeah, and they're always very like explicit about, oh, they're like drug addicts. They're like, you know,
and it doesn't really read any better the more you try to explain it away, right?
No, we're kind of talking in circles around here, and it's just. I think if it was made today, it might have been portrayed a tad more tastefully, right?
Yeah. So I guess what we're saying is like, it's the enemies you fight. It's not the most sensitive thing if you think about who you're actually fighting.
I think it could definitely be worse.
Yeah, it could be worse. I think what the game tried to do is they tried to spin it as people in poor situations are being sickened or being like affected by this bad thing, but it comes across as you just beating the hell out of people with pipes.
If you weren't paying attention to the story, it is literally just go and beat up like poor people simulator.
Yeah,
you
know, kind like, of. But should we do final thoughts on Condemned now that we've sort of danced around that?
That's the big sticking point is whether or not you'd recommend it is, I think,
okay.
If you can accept that, you know?
So here's, let me say this, like, it is very unique.
Yeah.
I have never played a game before it or after it that is quite like it.
Yeah.
Where it's a first person melee combat game.
Yeah.
And you can't reload your guns, which is the coolest part about it. You can't find ammo and you have to open your guns to count the bullets, which is kind of awesome.
Yeah.
And the story is unique. And I do think the game is very intimidating and you're going to be on edge the whole time. You got to be on top of your game.
Yep.
So I absolutely would recommend it, but it depends if like you're okay with the gamification of kind of what's going on, you know, in the gameplay, right?
Yeah. And it's also, you know, if you have to kind of set your expectation, this was made in 2005. A lot of even like the presentational aspects have aged.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
But I do think it's pretty creepy depending on where your tastes lie.
Sure.
I would recommend it. Do we want to get into the second one?
Are we doing grades now or after?
I had them at the end, but it's up to you. Do you want to?
We'll do the end. We'll do them both together.
Okay. Okay, so Condemned 2 Bloodshot.
Oof. Wait, can I make a statement first?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I want to make sure you know, when I was 15, I actually liked this game.
Right.
But like replaying it at the age of 31, I don't know.
Let me say this. I was surprised reading back on it that it was critically well received at the time.
So I should say this. Like, I was surprised at how much less I liked it now than I did back then.
And I'll state from the top, I don't think it's worthless, but there are a lot of like question marks I have about this game.
Can I make one anecdote?
Is it about your history with this
game? My history with the game?
I was going to bring it up. I was going to prompt you, but you can
Should
fire
I do it,
off.
Now? Yeah. So this is really funny. It's so weird. I feel like I have a history with my dad and Condemned, which is really weird. So when I was like 15, I was having a really hard time in chemistry class in high school. And I was doing really bad. I was teetering on a failing grade. And so my dad like felt bad for me, and he knew I was really waiting for Condemned 2 to come out.
Really?
And so he brought me to GameStop to buy Condemned 2, and he bought it for me.
Oh my God.
Like, he actually treated me to it. And there's another funny anecdote about this, where I was actually number 2 in the world in Condemned 2 multiplayer, which That's is crazy. Really bizarre. There's a multiplayer component to this game.
Very odd.
And I did defeat the number 1 player in one-on-one.
Wow.
So
we got to get him on the show.
Dude, I have a photo on my flip phone from high school of my leaderboard of me being number 2 in the world.
That's just unbelievable.
And yes, I was number 2 in Condemned 2 Bloodshot.
Because it's that era where a ton of games had unnecessary multiplayer, like Bioshock 2.
Yeah,
like,
well, I mean, this game came out right after the Call of Duty craze had started.
Yeah,
so.
And it's funny because I didn't even know this game came out until like years later.
Yeah,
I remember the first
one. This is 08 or 09.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
all right, let's do it.
Developed and published by the same team as the first game and released in the March of 2008. This game is set about a year after the events of the first game, with Ethan having become a violent alcoholic, completely off the rails, and suffering from more strange hallucinations. With the situation in Metro worsening, Ethan is called back into action by Lieutenant Rosa to track down Malcolm Van Horn and unravel the mystery behind the cult and conspiracy that set the chain of events in motion. We'll get deeper into the characterization in a bit, but does the setup work for you here, at least, like the premise?
So I remember being turned off at the start by this game because Ethan's character model has changed. His voice actor has changed.
Yeah.
And you did like an impression of this that was kind of funny, but I can't quite, I'm not going to get it 100% right. You did something like, yeah, this game is angry, right? We're mad. Yeah. Like this mad game. Like
it's very, because I was going to say, The previous game felt somewhat mature for its time.
Isn't that weird to say, where we had so many problems, or we should say we were kind of dancing around the cultural issues of that game, but
that's its own thing. But in terms of like the tone,
well, that's what I mean. We're like it kind of, but tonally, it's not like, how do I put it? It's not stupid.
Yeah.
Right?
Whereas this game, it kind of has that like Venom problem where it feels like it was made in 2004 and it's actually way later.
I actually have like the same problem with this game that I do with like Prince of Persia Warrior Within. Like we're
very like edgelord.
Yeah, we're like, Riley just put up the rock star fingers.
Yeah.
Like where I feel like, you know, you have the first game, which is we've already ranted about it, but to some extent the tone is kind of tasteful and cool.
Yeah.
But in the second one, it's like, yeah, we're badass, right? Yeah. Right.
And it just feels
so Godsmack soundtrack.
So wrong for
the
Condemned, because it was very, I don't know, just like detective on a scary path. You know, tracking a serial killer. Now it's like, let's kick some ass, you know?
Yeah,
like I don't know.
Ugh.
Let's get into it.
Yeah.
So the team prioritized improving the most frequently criticized aspects of the first game, which were the implementation of the forensic tools and the in quotes shallow combat system. Big thumbs down from Greg. They received praise from critics for this. I will say that at the time. For some perspective, here's what lead designer Frank Rook said about the combat system of Condemned 1. We didn't mess it up with a bunch of combos. It's just a basic, raw, primal kind of fight that you would expect in this setting. I completely agree with the original game's design philosophy. Condemned 2 features some similar mechanics. A similar weapon system as the first game. As far as I'm aware of, there are no special purpose weapons for unlocking new areas or whatever like the first one had. They have some throwable weapons, and now you can fist fight as some new alternatives as well. Can I ask you, why does blocking feel so bad in this game?
I actually have that in my notes.
It's awful, right?
It feels bad because you have to pull both triggers to block.
Yeah, why do they do that?
Why did they do that? Like, I think here's where they messed up.
Yeah.
Like, I have this down in my notes about this, where the combat in the first game is very simple. The combat in the second game is not complicated, but even though they added a few mechanics, it feels worse.
Yeah.
I think blocking with both triggers feels terrible. Having both triggers do like your left and right hand should feel normal, but it feels wrong.
Yeah.
And because they added combos like and a couple of different fighting game mechanics, it feels more... You guys don't like it when I do this, but what I use the word arcadey as like when I deride something.
It doesn't work for this type of game.
It doesn't work for this type of game. I think what happens is it pulls you out of the game a little. Where the first one, did the director use the word primal?
Yeah.
That's a really good word for it. And in this game, it feels a little silly. Oh, you can do this like neck breaker combo. Don't put that on the screen.
So for the first one, though, I talked a lot about just like the atmosphere and how... You know, fighting people with pipes, it's like scary. It's like survival. It's just very basic
improvisational
survival. Yeah. And in this one, I would suspect they did the two trigger thing to make blocking harder, but it just does not
it doesn't
feel good.
Work and because what happens is the sensitivity of blocking versus you swinging with your left and right hand is just off. Like
it doesn't feel good. And you have the combo system, which in my opinion is actually ironically a little shallow.
Like, yes,
you get the hang of it very quickly.
And I think what's wrong with it is enemies have increased inflated health now, and if you don't combo, you're hitting someone for minutes.
Yeah.
Like, and it's actually worse. Another thing I want to say that really burned me about this game, you can holster a gun now and reload it.
Yes.
And so I think they took one of the coolest parts of the first one out of this, and I don't like it.
I agree. I think the way firearms operate in general, like you get a holster at one point, and then you get one for like long guns, and it's really just like, what are we doing here? Like, this is a completely different game.
No, I think, is it okay if we talk about the end of level rewards now?
Yeah, sure.
So I also dislike that a lot.
Yeah.
What really bothered me about this was, so these are horror games. This is very moment to moment, white knuckle, intimidating stuff, but you get end of level rewards based on collectibles you find.
Yeah.
It was a bad idea.
Yeah.
Because these rewards are vital. Like, you get holsters for guns, sneaking, quieter, like very vital gameplay changes are based on you finding the collectibles in a level, and this is a horror game.
Yeah,
it was a bad idea, and I don't like it at all.
It's really stupid. Before we get too far away from the guns, I also wanted to mention, so you can now, I didn't really do this much, but you can aim down the iron sights
with long guns. I did it a little.
Yeah, and depending on he gets the tremors. So unless you drink alcohol, like it'll shake.
Yep.
So it's a mechanic. I'll give him that. Mm-hmm. But it's just, I didn't really aim down sight that much. I was just like,
do you know what's funny? I actually did not drink any alcohol in this playthrough.
Wow.
I never did it.
That's a teetotaler.
Yeah.
Run through.
Yeah.
How about that?
There's no achievement for it, I don't think. But
there should be.
Yeah, I never did it.
So the last element that was overhauled is the forensic segments, which now involve the player having to pay a little closer attention to crime scenes and correctly answer questions asked by Rosa for a bonus. I actually think this is one of the few positive changes.
So I actually think this is a really cool system.
Yeah.
So how do I put this? There's some positive and negative where you actually have to do a good job solving the crime and the game rates you based on how well you did it.
Right.
But I don't really like how it puts up like a 1 out of 5 star rating every
immediately
time.
After
immediately
you do
after.
It.
If they did it at the end of the level,
yeah,
that would be cool.
Yeah.
But like, what's the word for this where there's too many visual cues on the screen and it kind of takes me out of the game a little.
Yeah.
It feels too gamey.
Too much HUD,
right?
Yeah. It's And I don't really know what it... I think it just helps your score.
It helps your score at the end, which gives you the weird arcadey bonuses.
So in terms of the bonus, like giving you a bonus, I don't like that at all. But I like having this like multiple choice prompt where you can either give like, you know, an insightful answer, or you can ask like the right questions or the wrong questions. And it matters.
I do want, I feel like perhaps the reward system sort of should have been different, but I think the idea is good.
Yeah.
Maybe if you don't do a good job investigating the crime, the level is harder, or like you have to do it again, or there's something where, you know, there's some sort of remedial system, or something is worse if you don't do a good job.
Yeah.
But they didn't really do that.
I think it just like versus where you have a very, where it would, if it was designed now, I feel like it would be very like Fallout 4 kind of quest thing, like go here, kill this person, do, you know, very linear.
Well,
now it's like it engages you with the story and the setting a little bit more. And I think that in light of these other changes, which I feel are very incorrect, this feels like it fits better into the ethos of Condemned as a whole.
Well, let me say this though, if you get everything wrong, you still win, right? I believe
you still win. You just, you don't get like the, if you're a terrible agent, you're a terrible investigator.
The game still continues.
You can still punch your way to success.
Yeah. So that's where I feel like the reward system or what failure does, I don't think they got right.
Right.
But it's a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. So lastly about this segment here, I wanted to ask you, the second highest ranking member of all, what the multiplayer was like.
So there are two modes. One of the modes is a stupid team deathmatch thing where you just you all play as generic characters and you just melee combat people. Think of like Call of Duty, but all you do is melee.
Right.
So like honestly, killing players with toilet seat covers was really funny.
Yeah.
And like you with swords and battle axes and stuff.
Yeah.
There was a one kind of interesting mode where, did you ever play this?
No.
Where one team plays as the police and one team plays as the villains, and the villains have to hide a body.
Oh man.
You have to hide a decapitated head and the police have to find it.
That's cool.
And so there is another state where if all the villains kill all the police, you know, you win, or if the police kill all the villains, they win. Or if you find the body and get it out of the house, the police win.
All right.
It's really interesting. So I have to like recall one more memory where my friend Evan and I, who we affectionately call Baber, him and I were playing this. This is a very distinct memory I have, where him and I were playing as the police and we were playing online and we were trying to find the head in this farmhouse.
Yeah.
And I remember like I opened up this closet door and this enemy player with an axe was ready to swing at me.
Oh my God.
I dove out of the way and I shouted into my Xbox Live mic, "Baber, closet." And he goes up with a shotgun and decapitates the player with a shotgun. And the brains of the player got all over my character model.
That's incredible.
I very distinctly remember Baber closet. As this game.
That's great. I mean, it sounds like it wasn't completely worthless.
No, that mode was kind of interesting if there was more to it.
And I found out apparently it started out as like an internal test that the developers were having fun with. And they're like, we should make this a mode.
So yeah, it was cool.
I prefer that to whatever like shoehorned like nonsense you have.
I think if there were more levels or different maps, or if discovering the body, there was a little bit more to it, it may have had a little bit more staying power.
Yeah.
But it was cool.
Okay. So getting into... some other stuff here.
Oh boy.
Right off the bat, I just want to say that, so I tried briefly to play this through Gaming Preservation because it was only available on 360 and PS3.
Yep.
Never had a PC port. And the method of Gaming Preservation ran a lot smoother than it did on Xbox 360, which I think is insane. It ran terribly on the 360. I think this, along with like the griminess of how everything looked, all the textures, I was getting like some like really serious eye strain at certain
points. I think I am surprised at how bad this game runs. And I think you and I said the same thing. It's barely functioning.
Yeah. I was afraid it was going to crash a couple times.
Yeah. I'm surprised it doesn't crash more.
And it's crazy that the first game runs
perfectly fine.
Yeah. It's so weird. I think I will say that I think the environments are a lot more varied and maybe a little bit more memorable than the first game. Notably, the story was apparently designed around the environments rather than the other way around. So kind of a double-edged sword there. Mm-hmm. But there, I've kind of memory-holed a lot of this game already, but I do think certain, like, I remember the stupid Oblivion part where you put on, like, armor and you fight these guys with, like, swords and axes and stuff in a museum. And I remember going out to, like, the lodge in the snow and stuff. It just feels a little bit more picturesque than some of the, like, abandoned buildings in the first one. Did you have a particular memory you're smiling about?
Oh, the bear.
The bear. Oh, yeah. Yes, the bear. Love that bear.
And to be honest, like, it, I think what stinks is, like, the bear part, it doesn't run well on a technical level, so the scare runs out pretty quick.
Yeah.
But it's a cool idea.
It's tense. It's something we haven't seen before.
I don't know if we're going to talk about it bit by bit, but, like, the bear part is interesting because you find these dead bodies, and you have to do the crime scene thing where you're trying to figure out how they died, and it's really gruesome. They were eaten by a bear.
Yeah. It's awesome.
And you encounter the bear. It was cool.
I didn't have that in my notes, so I'm glad you brought it up. So I will say also ultimately that condemned atmosphere that I've effusively praised just wasn't really there for me this time.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say it's never scary or unsettling, but perhaps there's just like too many silly moments that took me out of it.
Yep.
Like, you're constantly, pestered by this, it's your character model with like a clown mask and they call it the alcohol demon. Do you remember this character?
Yep, I do.
It just never felt right to me. In particular about Ethan's character model, you now have this like this stupid shirt with like a crosshair on it. He's got the bandages around his arms like he's boxing. He has long hair. He's got like with dog tags around his neck. It just like feels like a completely different game.
Yeah, it, like I said, it's the same Prince of Persia Warrior Within thing. In the second one, we're badass, right? We've got a metal soundtrack now, right? We're tough, right? It's, like, we're ugly and mean now.
It's pathetic. It aged horribly.
Yeah,
the actor
bad.
Greg Gerwig was not asked to reprise the role of Ethan for some reason. They wanted an actor who could better capture the edgy darkness.
Oh, yeah, they're already toast if you say that.
You're done. So Ethan is now voiced by, I had a funny little note here. This very prolific voice actor, I hope I pronounce his name right, Andre Sogliuzzo, whose many other credits include Ishin from Sekiro.
Oh, wow.
And he was also the narrator of the classic film Bubba Hotep.
Great
film about Elvis and JFK going on a road trip together. So supposedly the team and fandom were both divided on this. I give it a big thumbs down, as does Greg.
Big thumbs down.
I could see them arguing about it because there's a lot of push and pull you can feel in the game where it feels kind of like Condemned 1, and then other moments are just like, I don't know what they were thinking.
Yeah, we've brought this up before, but I think it's one of these, well, Greg, you didn't get to direct it, so like I could pick apart the entire thing if I wanted to.
Yeah.
But I tend to lean towards the first one tonally is much cooler than this one.
Yeah, absolutely.
This game just like... It's this thing where if you try to be edgy and dark on purpose, it becomes silly.
Right.
And this game got silly.
Yeah, it's rough. So as far as silliness goes, shall we get into the silly story?
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, silly story time.
Okay.
Oh, no.
So under orders
they explained it, didn't they?
What?
They explained it, didn't they? That's
they,
what
they
you wanted.
Explain
you,
it.
You asked for this.
I did ask for
you
it.
You fucking asked for this.
I got what I asked for. You know what? I'm glad I got some closure here.
All right, go ahead.
So under orders from SCU director Ike Farrell, he's a minor character in the first game, kind of your boss. Ethan is recruited back into the fold by Rosa to locate Malcolm Van Horn. He is joined by the friendly Sergeant Pierce LaRue and the asshole Commander John Dorland. It's here I would like to address an early moment of dissonance I had where Dorland is really reading you the riot act. He's like, you're a mess. You're erratic. I don't trust you. And then he hands you a high powered assault rifle. And he's like, here's how it works.
Just like, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. You're on the roof of the hotel.
It's one of the first moments in the game. And I'm like, this is crazy.
Yeah, where he's essentially telling you you're a bum. You're a fucking idiot. Here's a riot shotgun. Aim straight. All right.
Right. It's insane, man.
Yeah.
I hated that. So they discover Van Horn's mutilated body, RIP, has its chest ripped open, and there's something going on with the vocal cords. So this is where Rosa draws a parallel with Ethan's X-ray and its censored vocal cords in the first game. So I got to ask you, what did you think was going on with the vocal cords?
Initially, I thought maybe the cult was taking people's vocal cords out.
Yeah,
that's what I thought.
That's what I thought, too.
Can I actually bring up a cool hotel moment? This game did one thing. Before you continue,
yeah,
this game did some cool things where your investigative tools can be used outside of linearity.
Yeah.
You can use them whenever you want. Did you encounter the moment where you used the UV light on a wall and it said, be careful, there's a gun in room 3-something?
No, I didn't see that.
It's cool. Like, it's... If you there's a this weird message on a wall that said there's a gun, and if you go into that room, there's an enemy who's pointing it at you.
Oh wow!
It's not sitting there.
That's
it's
cool.
Interesting. They never do anything cool again, but that was the only part.
Interesting.
But go ahead. Okay.
That was pretty early on, I think.
It was in the hotel.
Nice.
Yep.
So the mayor's body is also found decapitated in a museum with an X note attached to it. Rosa suspects that this was the work of serial killer X, Leland Van Horn. They never found his body, so I guess he could still be out there is the implication.
Dude, this is what actually pissed me off as a kid, and it pissed me off now. The final scene in Condemned 1 is you either shooting him in the face or he shoots himself in the face, and oh, he's back.
I don't even think that choice was great at the end, because you don't really have a binary choice up until that point.
No.
But this, like, totally invalidates
it. Yeah, they just invalidate the end of the first one.
Either choice didn't matter.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous, man. So it is revealed that Malcolm Van Horn recently visited a lodge outside of town. I don't know if I'm stupid, but I initially thought this was like the orchard from the first one, just covered in... Did you get that?
Oh, it's not. It's not. A different location.
I think they may have reused some of the assets,
yeah.
So it looks similar. But Ethan heads out there and discovers that his parents were members of a 3,000-year-old cult called the Oro. They left this order and were killed for it. This effectively, it's much to my chagrin, kind of sets up Ethan as this like chosen one archetype. It's so fucking
it's
awful.
Stupid. Like, they're essentially invoking like a Silent Hill religious cult meets Dune. Like,
or
it's
Harry
really
Potter or something.
Yeah, it's
you
really
know, like,
stupid.
It's ridiculous, man. So the Oro, this cult, their goals are sort of explained, but not in any way that makes sense to me or satisfies me. They apparently, so this, you know, you have these sonic projectors throughout the city. You mentioned in the first game with it's affecting the birds. They are using sound to convince violent people with violent tendencies to act on them. And it is said unknowingly become our protectors. And Ethan says, protectors against what? And they say, I don't know.
That's kind of how we feel, right? What are they talking about?
Oh my God. I hated this shit, man.
It was really bad.
I just like, cause I didn't know what was going on. I don't know what I would have preferred. Besides, like, you know, you mentioned maybe taking the vocal cords out. There's something going on with that.
Or maybe, like, would you have almost preferred, like, there is a sickness in some people's vocal cords and we have to take them out? Almost like a Metal Gear 5 thing, right?
Yes.
Where, like, speaking is going to infect other people.
Yeah.
Like that's more thoughtful, like, right?
Yeah. Or you become, if you don't, you become one of these.
It's really, this is bad.
I don't know.
It's bad.
I hated this. So Ethan and the director Farrell are captured by Leland, who has become obsessed with joining this cult and killed to study the abnormalities in his victims' bodies. You're betrayed by this guy Dorland at this point, and Farrell sacrifices himself so that Ethan can escape. You head over to this Oro base, which feels like something out of Half-Life or like, I don't know, a completely different game where they've been like transmitting this signal. What, you have a point here?
Wait, before we get there, do you have any notes about the Magic Man? Remember that guy in the theater?
Oh, you mean Sander Cohen ripoff?
Yeah, the Sander Cohen, which is, we're only going to talk about it for 30 seconds because it's like completely irrelevant.
I've totally
But like there's this weird
this.
Sander Cohen part where like you go to this theater. Is his name Magic Man?
His name is Magic Man.
Isn't that
no
also a
names.
Band? I think it is.
Is it?
Yeah. But anyway, it's completely irrelevant. I think he like tells you where the Oro base is.
Yes.
I think that's it.
Because earlier on, you have to identify like you have to, there's some case where you have to solve where it's like draw a line between director Ike Farrell,
yep,
you know,
yep,
whatever,
yep.
Blah, blah, blah. And then Magic Man. I don't know who Magic Man is. And then you find this guy. And isn't it funny? We said they, in the previous one, they did that mannequin thing before BioShock did. And in this one, they're like very clearly ripping it off.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like.
And also, I think it would be really funny if his name isn't Magic Man. I just don't remember.
No, I think that's his name.
I think that is
definitely his name.
Okay.
So you go to this base and you destroy it. And this is one of the funniest parts to me, is where you develop the ability to shout at people.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
You develop,
dude,
the Oro shout, and then you can shout at people and blow people's heads off. It's got
it. I was laughing so, because this game is very like, oh man, I'm gonna, and then like it just turns, he turns into fucking Black Bolt or something. Like,
yep.
What is it? Ah! And that's how you kill the final boss, is that you shout louder than him. This guy Dorland.
Yeah,
dude, I was so embarrassed.
Yeah, this game is. I don't. What's the next point you have? Because I don't. I'm kind of. I feel like I'm looking at you and kind of, I'm kind of scratching my head here.
So you wrap that up, and the game ends with the president receiving a note that says the remedy is among us, and he has a heart attack on live TV. And so I don't know, is that implying that he's like part of the cult?
I don't know.
I think maybe.
I don't think they know.
So you also have a post-credit scene where Leland is shown getting the hate implants in his face. So I think they wanted to make 3. I think they were definitely.
I believe, like, there is some there's some reporting on this where the director planned on a third one, but it never materialized.
Never came to fruition.
Condemned was going to be a franchise, like television shows, like 3 games. It was going to be a thing.
I actually don't know how this game did commercially. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, they both sold well and both reviewed well in the 80s. Metacritic.
Wow, I wonder what happened then.
I don't know.
Just shift in priorities. So I wanted to just kind of put a pin on the story here, reading through the synopsis again, seeing it all laid out, because I was following it, I think, for the most part as I was playing
it. I think as soon as you get to the bear, the game falls apart. Like it's
after
barely,
you're done with it.
Yeah, after you're done with the bear, the game completely falls apart. Before then, it's just silly and odd.
Yeah.
But then after that, it completely gets thrown out the window.
You're struggling to see the intent until you realize there is none.
Yep,
you know, like,
yep,
it's just throw shit at the wall. I think it just seeing it all laid out made me reassess it and be like, this was really dumb. Like,
yeah, this is very bad.
This is one of the dumbest game stories I've ever played.
Yep.
I don't know. Do you have any final thoughts on the story? It's just like, I don't know. What happened?
I can't believe as a kid I kind of liked this game.
I could see as a kid you thinking like some parts were fun, like the Magic Man in Vacuum maybe is kind of
fun.
Well,
like the bear is cool.
Yeah.
Right. I think when it comes to story wise, it's bad, right? What else? I don't have anything else to say. Like, I think there's a really good quote, like, what's it? Like, the mystery is more interesting than like actually being shown what it is, right?
What, Nicole Atkins?
Nicole Atkins. Yeah, that's right. We love Nicole. Oh, speaking of New Jersey and New York, we love Nicole
Jasbury
Atkins.
Park.
Yeah.
I think so. And it's, I don't know. I think I just wanted something in between. Because I think the developers even said this, like, we showed a little bit too much.
You're right. There's a quote about that, isn't there? Where we showed too much, or maybe it was more interesting not to, something like that.
Yeah, because I don't know. I would have just wanted a little bit more closure for the first game, like who that guy with the metal in his mouth is.
Yeah.
And then you kind of show your whole hand here, and it's just like,
what
stupid.
If the guy with the metal in his mouth was no one? Maybe it's just the illness hallucination, and it's the Metal Gear 5 thing.
It could be.
Yeah, that's probably a better idea.
It's a valid choice.
Well, we can't relitigate something from 17 years ago. So.
Well, that's where you're wrong. So
we're doing it right now.
I want to get into final thoughts on the series here, the two games in the series. So number one, you brought up a couple other media they were playing around with. Very interesting. There were talks of a movie adaptation, I think, of the first one, maybe.
Ooh.
And it was going to be by this guy, Tarsem Singh, who is this director who... His movies are kind of critically all over the place, but he has a very distinct sense of style that's very unsettling. So I think it would have been kind of cool to see his take on it. I think they maybe were inspired a little bit by his movies. Well, it obviously didn't come to fruition. And I think we can probably rule out a sequel at this point, although stranger things have happened.
Yeah, right.
We're getting a new Marathon game, sort of.
Yeah.
And that series has been out of commission for decades. I have a question for you before we get into grades here.
Mm-hmm.
If you had the reins and a blank check at this point, what would you do with the series?
Put the check in the bank.
just cash it.
Or rip it up.
No.
Okay. If I had to answer your question.
Yeah.
Okay. First person horror games made a revival in 2016, 2017.
Yeah.
I think they kind of missed their boat on this because they put out those Lord of the Rings games during that time.
Yeah.
But they're hot right now. Like, first person horror is hot. I think in theory, you could put out a third one, and I think you could have some success. I'm debating whether they should do a remake of the first one, but I think it's okay for what it is.
Yeah.
What would I do with the... do you think a third one is even viable because the story is so stupid? I think they screwed it. I think it's done.
I think it's a Halo situation for me where I would... I don't think there's any choice but to reboot it.
Yeah.
And what I would do is, like you said, I would kind of lean a little bit more into that Resident Evil 7 or PT kind of first-person horror where the atmosphere is really paramount. And there's been a lot of like VR stuff going on lately. Maybe they could mess with that.
Would you ever do an anthology series where we're going to have Condemned somewhere else? It's not Ethan.
Yeah.
And it's unrelated to all the dumb shit they screwed up.
Yeah. I would say just keep it very like as realistic as you can, you know, just, it's the atmosphere. I'm not playing this for the stupid cult story. Yeah,
keep
you
know it primal, I mean? Right?
Go after a serial killer. Keep it simple. Maybe play around with the forensic stuff a little bit more with the multiple choice questions.
Yeah.
Ultimately, I think there is hope if there is interest, but it's really,
well,
the brand is not really strong.
I mean this in like a cute way. Yeah. I think this is why goddamn GameCube exists. You know why? Condemned 1 and 2, I think now if you talk to younger gamers younger than us, they probably don't know what it is.
Exactly.
Or a lot of people don't. And I actually think they're very much worth playing, especially the first one.
Yeah.
I feel like Condemned 1 teeters on this would be an underrated gems game for us.
Yeah.
It's like right there. It was a launch title, so that's impossible. But it's right there in terms of, I think more people should play it.
Yeah. Do you want to get into grades?
Yeah, sure. So I'm very high on the first one. I think just like I said with Fear, I'm high on it. How high?
Right.
I'm going B+ or A- on the first one. Oh, and nice. I just don't know where I should go.
Interesting.
Like, I don't know if you could convince me one way or another.
I'm going to go with a B on the first one. Not because it's like there's a bunch of problems with it or anything. I think it's very solid. I think maybe there was room for improvement in a couple of places. There's room to iterate and expand. But I think it's a very solid piece of work. I don't know. Do you want to do the second one?
So or like, I'll say B+ on the first one. If you went B, I'm going to go B+.
Okay.
Because let's say like why it's not an A, because it teeters.
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit too clunky to be an A rated.
Yeah.
Like the combat is simple and cool, but it's definitely not like, it's not the best thing I've ever played in my life. Right.
Because I think I gave Fear a B+, and this is like
one, a little bit
one
less.
Rung lower. Yeah.
I think I'm going to, wow. I think for Fear and this, I give them the same grade.
Yeah.
I like them both. But the second one, my initial impression is C-. How do you feel?
Wow. Ouch.
Because ready? I'm going to lay down my argument.
Okay.
Ahead. It barely runs.
Yeah.
At times it doesn't. Collectibles are in charge of your upgrades. There's an upgrade system at all in a horror game.
Yeah.
The voice acting is terrible. The game is really silly. The story is awful. They fucked it up. And also they got rid of the cool features in the first game, which is the gun system. So to me, that's C-. What do you have?
I agree. C-.
Okay.
I think because I had to consult my rubric here.
Yeah.
C-, is as bad as it can get without me getting mad.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's where Condemned 2 is for me.
I think so.
So just keep that in mind. If you get into this series, we're not very positive.
No, I would understand. I don't think I could go higher than a C. Like,
no.
I don't think I could.
No.
Especially compared to how... It's weird for me to call the first game tasteful because of some parts we've talked about, but how bad the drop off is.
It's rough.
And also, you know what? You want C-? they made the combat worse by, and it's not even complicated.
Almost everything is worse.
Almost everything is worse.
It is what it is. I think I've said my piece.
Yeah, we've said our piece on Condemned. Happy spooky month to everybody. Next week, we are doing Eternal Darkness.
Very exciting.
We've got a really cool special guest for that one as well.
Yes, we do.
So we'll catch you guys next time on Goddamn GameCube. Thank you.